You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
Young people want to be able to have access to care, education, security, and they want to go to college. I feel that the recruiters know this and they use it.
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It is produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. Our first guest is an organizer with CISPUS, Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, and the Olympia Movement for Justice and Peace. Political science professor Larry Mosqueda sat down with correspondent Tony Zaragoza to discuss the outlook of military and war 3 years into the invasion of Iraq.
Well, there is this phrase out there, support the troops. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what that looks like. And is our government itself living up to that phrase, support the troops?
Well, there's two ways to think of the term support the troops. One is from a right-wing pro-Bush perspective, a pro-war perspective, is that the support the troops becomes a slogan for people who are waving the American flag on street corners and say they want to support Bush's war. Real support for the troops, in my opinion, essentially support for the Americans who have been literally economically drafted and economically enticed into the military, and to get them out of Iraq as soon as possible. There was a quote published in the Financial Times which indicated that most troops in Iraq want to get out of Iraq this year. In fact, about 30% of the troops want to get out immediately, and over 70% of the troops want to get out in the next year. If you actually support the troops, what you would want to do is actually support their ability to get out of Iraq immediately, or at least by the end of 2006. Now, this war is illegal and immoral, and it's something that we should stop immediately, not as soon as possible, not when we get around to it, not when the United States government thinks that there's so-called democracy in Iraq, but immediately.
Well, what do you say to folks who say, well, we made this mess and it's our duty to stay there and clean it up? We can't just cut and run, as they say.
Well, the word we is important, too, is that the American people were really not consulted about the war in any truthful way. So the American people actually were against the war when it started. They were about 50-50 against having a war in Iraq, even with the lies the Bush administration was giving us. And so the American government made this mess. But the American government, especially the Bush administration, is really incapable of actually doing the right thing in Iraq and many other places around the world. The idea that we left there would be a civil war and therefore we have to stay is actually quite insane. There already is a civil war type activity going on. And if as soon as the United States gets out, then the Iraqi people can figure out what they're going to do. There will be many people who will, I'm sure, die in the next year after the American government pulls out. But also be many people who are dying right now as the American government's in there. The American government is the main problem in Iraq. Scott Ritter points out to me, the former UN inspector for weapons, points out that the American government is the key to actually stopping the war. That is, leaving is actually key to stopping the war. It won't stop until we get out.
Can you paint us a picture of how much this war is costing the folks who live in the United States?
Yeah, well, as of basically April of this year, 2006, the amount of money that's been appropriated is about $440 billion. The amount of money that's been spent is about $250 billion, and that's from different estimates on, like, the National Priorities Project, et cetera, and looking at the U.S. budget. So basically, the war has, as of right now, is a guaranteed cost, even if we pull out immediately being sometime in 2006. The immediate cost of the war would be closer to actually $350 billion, and there's no end in sight. There was a study done by a Harvard professor recently indicating that the cost of the war actually might be between $1 and $2 trillion in the long run, and because that's not just the cost of the war that's appropriated, but also the cost of taking care of veterans when they come back, people without limbs, veterans' benefits, et cetera, and the cost of the war to the economy of the United States. So it's about $1 to $2 trillion. And the $2 trillion basically means if we go on and continue this war for a number of years, the $1 trillion estimate is actually if we get out very, very quick. So the American people are actually losing both ways. They're losing their blood and basically their sons and daughters in Iraq. They're losing any pretense of any innocence in Iraq. Plus they're losing a lot of money that could be spent for other activities.
Can you comment on the cuts to the VA benefits and that?
I mean, that's actually some of the most insidious things from a domestic standpoint. The Bush administration says that it supports the troops and goes around to different military bases and gives speeches using the troops as props in the background, if you've seen them on television. And the Bush administration is trying to save some money on taxes and also on expenditures. So they're cutting domestic programs, and part of the domestic programs they're cutting is veterans benefits, including the military hospitals, et cetera. So it becomes a most insidious way of actually killing off the American population. Either they get killed in Iraq or they get killed when they come back because they can't get medical care. Think of the ages of these people. Of course, they're in their teens and 20s. I imagine the average age is in the late 20s. I mean, these people who are going to live actually a fairly long time without limbs, et cetera. And they do need to be supported. They do need to be retrained. There's no reason that they can't be retrained to become productive members of society. But that's not what the Bush administration is doing. And I've talked to a lot of people, including the Veterans for Peace, a group that I belong to as an auxiliary member. They're very concerned about the troops actually not being supported by the Bush administration when they get back. And they're not being supported by the Bush administration, of course, when they're even over in Iraq because of body armor, et cetera.
Well, what do you think is our military's role right now in the world as it's controlled by this ruling class, this ruling group? And what could that role be?
Well, the role of the military in any society, especially a powerful society, especially an empire, is to enforce foreign policy. So the role of the military right now is basically to enforce empire around the world. And that's not just my opinion. If you take a look at the Project for a New American Century, their recent report, recent meaning year 2000, in Rebuilding America Defense is the name of the report, they talk about the role of the military is to make sure that the disparity that exists in the world continues to exist. So the role of the military is not to make freedom around the world, is not to create democracies around the world. The role of the military is not to defend our rights of free speech, etc. That might be a role that some 18 or 19-year-old thinks is his role as he's been socialized into military and also in American society. But the role of the military is to enforce basically the ruling class's hold on the world. That cannot continue. And I'm not talking about cannot continue morally. I'm talking it cannot continue financially and politically. If the American government is basically losing its economic hegemony around the world, its economic power around the world relative to China and also relative to Europe, and it cannot continue to actually have a garrison state. And so the role of the military actually should be to help them and to defend the American population. I remember reading a report many years ago by the Center for Defense Information, which is a group of retired military officers, and they pointed out that the amount of money that the military budget is actually spent to defend the physical territory of the United States, that is the 50 states, was only about 3% of the budget. And so it's a very small percentage. If you think of where our troops are stationed in Europe and now the Middle East, different parts around the world, is that the role of the military is to protect, quote, American interests, which are corporate interests around the world, which are not the same interests as the population of the United States. So the people in the military want to defend the United States, but going over to Iraq is not defending the United States. Going over to Iran is not defending the United States. Going to Vietnam was not defending the United States. Going to Grenada was not defending the United States. Involved in illegal activities in Nicaragua and El Salvador was not defending the United States. It was defending the interests of the elites. And the same people who are killing peasants in El Salvador and Nicaragua, also now in Iraq, and are planning to kill people in Iran, are the same people who are using American working class people to basically make themselves continue to be rich.
You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. Correspondent Tony Zaragoza is speaking with CISPUS organizer and political science professor Larry Mosqueda about the U.S. military.
Well, you mentioned before an economic draft, and I'm wondering if you could talk about what are the reasons that folks go into the military in that kind of economic draft way.
Yeah, I've done actually a considerable amount of research on the economic drafts actually for the last 20 years. And the reason that most people go into the military is not for, just purely patriotic reasons. People talk about that, quite a bit. But actually when you do interviews with people, and several studies have done interviews, is that people go into the military for economic reasons, to get a job. If you can't get a job in the civilian sector, you can get a job in somewhat of a beginnings of a career, or at least it appears that way in the military. And so most of the people who joined in the military, especially the enlisted ranks, tend to be people from the working class, basically people of color and also poor white people in rural centers, and that's where the military is trying to recruit people. So it's very much of an economic draft. If you have policies which actually do not allow people to go to college, and then in addition, we talked earlier about the veteran benefits being cut, also student loans and student aid is being cut. So many people have really very little choice. I don't want to say people have no choice, but they have very, very little choice. From an economic standpoint, if you're an 18-year-old kid from Philadelphia and you haven't studied American foreign policy, maybe joining the military sounds like a rational decision. But from a larger standpoint, it's not a rational decision, because actually you're being sent off to a war, which you don't necessarily want to participate in, and many people will come back hurt.
Well, what would you say to listeners who are seriously thinking about joining the military?
I'd say don't do it. Straight out, don't do it. I did a study on the military benefits, the college benefits. You have to sign up for the military benefits. If you're in the military, you don't get it automatically. And only about a third of the people who sign up actually get the full benefits that they signed up for. Another percentage of people actually get some benefits, and about a third get none whatsoever, and they pay money into it. Actually, you're better off if you're a poor person and you need financial aid, even though financial aid is being cut, is to start off at a community college, go to school part-time, so you can get a job part-time when there are a lot of part-time jobs out there. If you go to school half-time, it might take you 8 years to graduate with a BA. If you go in the military, if you spend 4 years in the military and you get your benefits, it'll take you 8 years anyway. But the likelihood is not going to work. So I would say don't do it. Don't do it for economic reasons, because it's a ripoff. Don't do it for political reasons, because you're essentially involved in a war crime activity that you're being used as a cannon fodder. And don't do it for moral reasons, and people should actually try to figure out if it's in their moral interest to engage in being a hitman for the American government, because this is not defensive activity for American society.
Can you talk a little bit about Iran? There's a lot of speculation as more and more news reports come out about Iran's nuclear power ambitions. What is our government saying right now about Iran, and what do you think will be the near future?
Iran was actually mentioned in the Project for New American Centuries, Rebuilding America's Defenses. And in fact, that particular report indicated there are three countries that they were concerned about that they want to end their ability to operate as sovereign states, and that was Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, Bush has called the axis of evil. But this report was written in September of 2000, actually before the elections and before 9/11, so it actually, 9/11 had nothing specifically to do with the Project for New American Century. They just used that as an excuse to put their plan into effect. Iran has actually been a target by the United States for many, many years. As you know, the American government overthrew the government of Iran back in, I believe, 1953 and installed the Shah of Iran. And the Shah of Iran ran that country until about 1979, and when there was an Iranian revolution, Islamic revolution. And so with the current situation in Iran, where the people of Iran dislike the American government and dislike what actually American policy, is not some brand new activity. It's a result of many decades of imperialist adventures into Iran. Plus, we have to remember that Iran is four times the size of Iraq, both in population and in territory. And so if you think Iraq is a mess, just wait to see what happens if the United States invades Iran. Now, probably the United States is not going to physically invade Iran, because it does not have the military personnel to actually do that. What it might actually do is to bomb Iran. And if the United States bombs Iran with conventional weapons, actually it won't accomplish much of its task. If it bombs Iran with nuclear weapons, then it's actually broken the threshold of using nuclear weapons. And so it could actually go nuclear. So the American people should be very concerned about the American government's activity in Iran, because it's not just a question of what's going to happen in Iran, but what could happen in the Middle East, Europe, and the United States.
Can you now just talk about other places that the U.S. military is in operation? We hear a lot about Iraq and Afghanistan, as we had all-out invasions of those two countries. But as you have already mentioned, we have bases all around the world, and we have troops all around the world. What are some of the other places that folks should really be paying attention to what our military is doing?
One report I heard from ABC, which is owned by Disney Corporation, not exactly a left-wing organization, pointed out that we have more troops in the parts of the world since the Roman Empire of any country. And so the United States basically is an empire. It's not going to be an empire. It's not defensive per se. It's an empire. It's trying to defend American corporate interests, not American people's interests. And so the American people need to become very aware of why the world is engaged in activities against the United States. The New York Times reported after the massive demonstrations right before the war started in 2003 that there are two superpowers in the world. One is the American government. The second is the world opinion. And world opinion of people in France and in Brazil and Mexico, of people in Asia and Africa, is actually against the American government. Now, world opinion, and actually the United States, is actually against the American government. Now, Bush's policies, as we speak now, only have the support of about 35% of the American population, and it's going down. So the American population is actually against the American government's policies. The American troops in Iraq are against American policies, that the poll I cited earlier. So the American people actually need to rise up whatever way possible to stop the American government from doing what it's going to do, because it's not just in the interest of the people around the world, but it's also not in the interest of the American population.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Tony Zaragoza just interviewed organizer and political science professor Larry Mosqueda about the current role of the U.S. military. Up next, we feature an interview from the show Living Art, which airs in Houston, Texas on KPFT. In 2005, host Mike Woodson interviewed internationally known artist Elia Arce. At that time, she was performing the Fifth Commandment at Diverse Works. Arce thought about this performance prior to the invasion of Iraq. Being from Costa Rica, Arce watched the U.S. invasions of Central America during the late 70s and early 80s. They instilled a fear in her. In her interview with Woodson, she described the physical fear that she had towards the United States flag. She conceptualized the Fifth Commandment to confront this fear and better understand the U.S. military.
The piece is interdisciplinary piece. There are videos that are companion to some of the interviews that I will be reading and interpreting. There is also Cameron and Greg, who are here with me today to participate also in the performance. Well, one of the things that I have discovered, I guess, is that because of their training, the ability to focus and be disciplined and be totally present actually on stage, it's very strong, which makes for good performance. So there is, for example, a flag folding ceremony that is part of the performance where we honor people who have lost their loved ones in a war, who receives the flag. And that when I saw it, I just thought it was such a beautiful choreography piece, just because that's the way I look at things. So to me, it was a beautiful choreography that I think that they execute beautifully and very moving. The idea is also to challenge myself and challenge the audience in terms of, especially again for people who are used to going to see artwork, you know, our crowd, progressive people, is to give meaning to something that I feel that it has meaning. And I feel that it will be too easy to make fun of things or to do things with irony. And so whatever it is, actually, the way that I try to work it is that whatever feels that the logical thing will be to make fun of it or to make an irony is actually to take it seriously and do it with belief and presence, and that is moving. Because I also believe in taking back the flag, taking back your own country, and I feel that's empowering, and just taking back your spirituality. We have the morals, you know. We are acting on our morals.
And that's actually an interesting aspect of Elia's show, is that she didn't necessarily write the show, because it's based upon these interviews that she did. If people feel that it has anti-war sentiment, then understand that it's a conclusion that they've arrived upon themselves just based on watching it, and that's based on the experiences mainly of veterans who have been in that environment. So they need to consider and think about why they're feeling that way, and maybe there is more substance to the issues than they know about, and that's why they're walking away from it thinking, oh wow, that show kind of was anti-war. But they have to understand that, you know, she didn't write it. She didn't go into a room and, like, let's see, what can I put here? What can I put here to get this emotion? It was derived from interviews. These are spoken words from people who have served in the military.
One of the Marines responds to his experience of Operation Iraqi Freedom and reads a spoken word piece from the performance.
I've been in Australia for the past year with, you know, my family, Vicky, Declan, and Zach. and I haven't done really anything. I can't watch the news no more because, you know, I have friends and stuff like that. And Cameron, I called him up one day. I haven't talked to him for like 2 months, and he told me that one of my friends, Smitty or Smith, got shot 1 week before he was supposed to come back to the States. And it's kind of really emotionally overbearing for me. You know, one of the pieces that Elia does in the show is actually from an interview from my friend Matt Howard and I, and she reiterates that, I guess, you know, into theater. And I have the piece here if you want me to read it.
And yes.
Okay. So. It's titled "I Laughed," but this was not written. This was actually words spoken. "At the time, you were in a completely different mentality. I laughed, you know? That is one of the hardest things I have in myself right now. I keep talking to my friends about it. You're a completely different person over there. And how horrific does it sound? But when you're over there, it's just so different. If I would have thought what I think now, I would have destroyed myself. You have to be conditioned. You have to condition yourself. But no training that you get can help you prepare for that. Because what do you do for training? You know, you do push-ups, pull-ups, 3-mile runs. We get yelled at. We have to clean things. But you can't handle someone sitting down, crying, bleeding, losing life, and begging for help. And then you got someone else there in charge of you, yelling at you just to leave them alone. I mean, there's no training to condition you for that. You can't be conditioned for the bloodlust that you see on these people that you thought were your friends, or worse, the people that are your friends. And you just see the look in their eyes, and you hear their mentality. And honestly, they're just out to kill. And it's like a game. It's like a video game. They're boys playing with toys. But their toys kill people. They are tanks and machine guns. And it's like, wow, look how many people I just killed, you know? And people honestly cared about getting their kills in. People were on actually bragging about it. And you get to this point where you're bragging about it. Like, if you shoot a person and they jump up, you try to hit them in the air. And, you know, it sounds so inhumane. But when you're there, it's like, you know, it's really terrible. And you don't think about it while it's happening. But when you're sitting there in a fighting hole and you can't sleep and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning and you're just watching what looks like shooting stars, but in all actuality is artillery and mortar rounds, you just, you know, take a pause and think, what have I done? And what am I part of? You really don't have to kill anybody to be a killer. You could be a killer in your own mind. You don't necessarily have to take part of anything. Sometimes the most devastating thing you could do is nothing. And I said that, and I do believe that because I was one of the more senior Marines in my platoon, and people would come to my room, and I bought a charcoal grill, and I used to always have all these, like, you know, get-togethers and stuff like that. And obviously, you know, when, you know, men get together, especially military, that we tend to have a couple of drinks. And, you know, once your subconscious is talking, because the alcohol, you know, drowns out the consciousness, you hear these people talking. And I'd have, you know, grown men, you know, covered in tattoos and, you know, able to bench like 300 pounds, like, you know, crying in my arms. And one of the guys, he's actually just so sad because he feels disappointed that he actually didn't do nothing. He feels that he went there, just sat around and watched everything happening and didn't do nothing, so he feels like less of a man. And it's just really awful, you know? And like I said, I haven't really dealt with anything because I've been, you know, in Australia just trying to, you know, be with my family. And I don't watch the news no more. I can't watch it. I talked to Cameron 2 days ago on June 9th. There was a car bombing, you know, people in the States, you know, it's just, they, you know, oh, another car bomb. It's just like, you know, you see it so much, you get desensitized, you know, now that, you know, that we haven't been attacked for a while, no one cares no more. And it's pretty much not an issue unless you have a family member over there. And the ironic part is that I actually saw a car bombing, but when Cameron told me that it was Daniel Chavez, it really struck hard to home because I was with him for 4 months, and my fiance Vicky is over there in Australia, and we was on guard, and I used to use his phone to call her. And so I'd always joke around with him, and we really developed a friendship. And we call him Boots because they're just so fresh from boot camp. And, you know, he was my boot. I used to call him my boot, and I messed around with him, picked on him. You know, we'd goof around on guard and make, you know, MRE bombs. You get you put water and add heat, and you throw it into like a bottle and add water and shake it up and it explodes and scares the crap out of everybody, and it's really funny. And you know, yeah, you know, but just to think this awesome little guy, I mean, he's just, you know, how old is he, Cam? 19?
He's 20.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he had a birthday. Yeah, obviously I've been gone for a year. How do I feel about it? With extreme hate and fear and confusion, because some part of me wants to feel pride. Saddam is gone, but is the country any better? I doubt it. These civilians are the ones living in fear, you know, and you hear about all these people attacking everyone and stuff like that, but it's just a few radicals, you know. It's obviously the news grabs at straws and changes everything around, so it sells. So I feel very, very against the war, and I feel a lot of hatred.
Yeah, I feel a lot of anger too, because you have, you know, men and women who are in their 20s, and they, you know, I feel that they still haven't experienced the best years of their lives, and they're sent to fight for this cause that truly, I don't believe that they understand what they're actually over there for. I mean, they have this idea that's been told to them, but it's really frustrating with the fact that you have these young men and women, and then on the other side of the spectrum, you have the citizens of Iraq who are getting caught in the middle of this battle, and a lot of them are, you know, children who are dying, and they don't even understand what's going on, and they don't know why they should be afraid of, you know, these men around them. But I think mainly right now that I feel a lot of anger and frustration with this country. And don't get me wrong, because I love this country, but this is a country that has now supported a regime. They took them to war based on false information and continued to support the administration as they used fear, lies, and deceit to push their imperialistic agenda upon the rest of the world. And we as a country have allowed this to happen. And, you know, it still seems like we do nothing about it. And I know that there are those of us who protest and we speak out and we try and do our small part. But unfortunately, the minority does not speak for the overall sentiment of this country. And as long as we have clothes on our back or food on the table, satellite television, and all our materials, like amenities, we really don't seem to care about what goes on. As if it's not in our backyard, we really don't care. And as long as we don't have to see it, we feel it doesn't affect our lives. They say ignorance is bliss, and the best slave is the one who thinks he's free. And I have to agree with the people who say that this country is heading in the wrong direction, because we have to hold ourselves accountable, because ultimately we as a people control this government. And we can change it. We have the power to change it. We've seen it in many countries that the people have the power to change things when they're not the way that they should be. And whether that means to elect different officials or what, you know, I don't know. I think that's still to be discovered. But we have to do it soon, or I think it's going to be too late. Eventually we'll fall as all empires fall.
The invasion of Iraq affects our relationship with the entire world. We have a direct influence over what our country is doing. This aggression for profits and control of property must stop. That is all we have time for on this edition of People's Tribune Radio. A special thanks to Mike Woodson of KPFT and the LA Sound Posse for providing the living art material. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 1-800-691-6888. Once again, 800-691-6888, or visit us online at www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks for listening in, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.